It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Monday, March 11th. I'm Erin Fulton with Raven News. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman and other key legislators are working to establish a task force to address what they call unprecedented challenges in the Alaska seafood industry due to Russian fish flooding the global market and other economic forces beyond the state's border. As reported by Yareth Rosen in the Alaska Beacon, Senate Concurrent Resolution 10 was introduced on March 1st and is sponsored by the Senate Finance Committee. According to the sponsor's statement, the industry's troubles caused a loss to Alaska's economy of more than $2 billion in 2023. The resolution got its first hearing on Thursday in the committee that introduced it. The task force idea is modeled after one created 20 years ago to help the then-struggling Alaska salmon industry, according to Tim Lampkin, a Stevens staff member working on the project. Then, Alaska salmon fishers and sellers were facing low prices and a shrunken global market share caused by booming production of cheap farmed salmon. That 15-member task force needed 2 years to complete its work, Lampkin said. In contrast, the Joint Legislative Seafood Industry Task Force would consist of 7 members and would present its findings and recommendations to the legislature in less than a year. Kodiak Island Borough Mayor Scott Arndt testified in favor of the task force, saying that industry woes have caused severe strain in his region. He mentioned the pending closure or sale of Trident seafood plants, which have been economic pillars in the region, and a looming increase in Kodiak Electric Association rates, the first increase in 30 years, that is needed in part because of reduced sales to seafood processors. Russia is the source of a significant amount of trouble for the industry, said ASME Executive Director Jeremy Woodrow. He cited a dramatic example. While Alaska's 2023 pink salmon harvest of nearly 200,000 metric tons was large, Russia harvested over 3 times that much, he said. And while sales of Russian fish are banned in the United States, Alaska still competes with Russian fish in the global marketplace. Global inflation is another challenge, causing demand for seafood to slide, he said, while high interest rates are squeezing harvesters and processors. KCAW's Catherine Rose is on assignment in Japan this week, where she is looking into the industry and culture of herring. Rose's first stop was the Toyoshu Fish Market in Tokyo, the Grand Central Station of Asian seafood.
This is Catherine Rose, and you are hearing the sounds of Toyoshu Market around me. This is the largest wholesale fish market in Japan, and it's in Tokyo. You may have heard of it before. It's where a famous tuna auction happens every morning around 5 a.m. It's a little bit later than 5 right now. It's around 6:30 a.m., and I'm walking through a maze of fish stalls. Each one of these is a different business. And this is where a sushi chef might come to buy their fish for the day at the best price. And I'm telling you, the diversity of seafood here is staggering. Every day, fresh fish from Japan and from all over the world arrive here. This is the first stop for that fish on its path to the consumer. I'm here with Dr. Shingo Hamada. He's an anthropologist and a herring researcher from Japan. And he's showing me right now where we can find the herring eggs. And we've actually found some sacro from North America.
What's this? That's the salted kazunoko from United States or Canada.
Uh-huh.
But this is a product of China. So yeah. The Japanese law requires, to label the product of origin. Uh-huh. In this case, it's China. So they just mentioned the final stop for the processing location, so it's China.
Toyoshu Market is our first stop in Tokyo, and next we are going to Tsukiji Outer Market to see if we can find some herring eggs to eat.
That was KCAW's Catherine Rose reporting from the Toyoshu Fish Market in Tokyo, Japan. Rose will be sharing more stories from her travels over the next week. Her trip is a project of KCAW and the Alaska Center for Excellence in Journalism. You can see photos on our website, kcaw.org. Timber sales in southeast Alaska's Tongass National Forest often spark conflict between environmental groups, the timber industry, and the U.S. Forest Service, which is making the sale. Timber companies want more opportunities to harvest, and environmental groups want to protect the forests. But a new sale near Petersburg focusing on second growth trees has all those groups on board. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the sale design is the result of the Forest Service changing its public process over the years.
Brett Martin has owned a small sawmill for 35 years. He lives part-time in Petersburg and part-time in Sitka and loves making lumber out of Southeast's trees.
2x4s, 2x6s, fence posts, fencing. Anybody who's ever sawn logs into lumber, you know, it gets into your blood and it's something you really enjoy.
Martin considers himself one of several small cottage industry mills in the region. He's also been a logging engineer for 3 decades, contracting with the Forest Service and private companies to inventory forests for possible harvests. He has seen timber sales dramatically decline in the last few decades, devastating the region's industry. Employment went from the thousands when logging old growth was common practice to less than 300 workers a few years ago. There is only one remaining larger-sized timber company in the region, Viking Lumber on Prince of Wales Island. They have the necessary infrastructure to harvest trees in very remote places. And Viking has sustained its company by shipping logs out of Alaska in the round to be processed somewhere else. Martin says that means Alaskans must import their lumber.
Most of the lumber that's used for construction purposes in Alaska, a lot of it shipped up from the lower 48, if not most of it.
But Martin sees an opportunity to keep more lumber in Alaska with the Forest Service's shift from old growth to young growth timber sales. The Tongass has 17 million acres of forest, and Martin says about 4 to 450,000 acres is young growth or second growth, meaning it's been previously logged. It's those young trees that the Forest Service wants companies to harvest while preserving the old growth stands.
There's certain old growth areas we just leave alone. We're going to leave them, you know, for wildlife and for old growth characteristics and things like that we want to maintain over time.
Ray Bourne is a Forest Service District Ranger based in Petersburg. He's helping to manage the new timber sale in Thomas Bay. The initial proposal was for about 22 million board feet, mostly clear cut. After a few years of public process, they shrunk the harvest to 12.6 million board feet to be harvested through a patchwork of areas over several years. Thomas Bay has been logged to varying degrees from the 1930s through the 80s. The Forest Service still considers it a productive area with the ability to regenerate harvestable trees in 60 to 80 years. Bourne says there could be continuous harvests if it's done piecemeal.
So the intent is we'll do some now, and 20 years down the road, we'll do some more. 20 years down the road, we'll do some more. And in about 80 years, we can come back to where we started at.
Harvesting smaller areas over time could be better for wildlife, and it could allow small sawmills more opportunities. Those are comments the Forest Service has heard during the public process leading up to the sale. Bourne has been working with the Forest Service for 3 decades and says a lot has changed in how they approach timber sales.
It's more listening. We've listened more carefully to all of the people that have an interest in it now, and it's more holistic. And that's kind of one of the unique things about the Forest Service is, you know, we focus on serving the people and caring for the land. It's that balance there that makes it really interesting, and we're spending more time in listening to the people now.
I actually have lots of good things to say about the Forest Service in relationship to this particular timber sale.
Katie Rooks is with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Her group often opposes timber sales, but they see the Thomas Bay one differently.
This feels like a different timber sale. Instead of going for the obviously most profitable alternative, they do create a pretty decent balance between providing some timber and wildlife habitat.
Rook's group isn't anti-timber, but they are against clear-cutting old growth. They believe it's bad for the trees and the wildlife. The Thomas Bay sales environmental assessment consider the impacts to deer, moose, wolves, marine mammals, salmon, and birds. Rooks also supports the federal effort to break up the acreage over time, catering to small sawmills.
To be able to somewhat create a market for this timber and to process it here locally as much as possible into a higher value-added product.
That's exactly what small sawmill owners like Brett Martin are interested in. He has a vision to expand his company and provide building materials for Southeast residents and businesses. He also wants to sell cabin kits from the local wood.
I can hire 14 to 16 guys full time. And that's just in my sawmilling side of it. I truly want to start a construction side of it, which would then allow us to, you know, start building cabins, because people will come, they'll want to buy a kit. And then the very next question out of their mouth is going to be, do you know of anybody who builds them? I could potentially hire, you know, 20 to 25 people full time.
To accomplish his business goals, Martin would like to buy 2 million board feet a year for the foreseeable future. But first, he has to win the bid for the Thomas Bay sale, which the Forest Service plans to open in April. Reporting for Coast Alaska, in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Taking a look at the community calendar. Sitka Conservation Society and Sitka Sound Science Center host a 3-day camp for families and individual participants age 7 to 99, beginning at 1 p.m. today through Wednesday, March 13th. Alaska Storytellers offers free dance classes for those age 16 and older at 6:30 p.m. today at 215 Smith Street, as well as Friday, March 15th, 22nd, and 29th. I'm Erin Fulton, and this has been Raven News.